This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
The main events for UFC 224 and 225 are officially announced. CM Punk says that he's fighting in Chicago. Should the UFC sign Nick Newell? Verdum and Volkov jockey for positioning in the heavyweight division this weekend in London on Fight Pass. And we are joined by two Canadians that will be on the card. Hakeem Dawodu making his UFC debut, and Cajun Johnson, who's on a four-fight winning streak right now, will join the show. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and in Ottawa, or to those that are listening to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, subscribe. Let's get the word out about the TSN MMA show.
I agree.
Yeah. You're going to Montreal this week, TKO?
I am. Yeah, I'm excited. This is one of my first fighters that I've built into an MMA show, and he's getting his TKO Pro, not really his debut, but Canadian debut. And I'm excited to show bazooka style kickboxing and MMA, man. Like, this kid's talented. Tariq. It's going to be on Fight Pass, but you're going to see a lot of good low kicks and a lot of good bazooka-style kickboxing. I'm pumped, man. I feel this kid has, like, that Demetrius Johnson style where he's going to be hard to take him down. His striking is, you know, higher level than most of these guys in the UFC. And he's a three-sport athlete. He's pro box, he's done pro kickboxing, and now pro MMA. So the kid's talented, and I'm pumped to see it.
What weight class is he in?
He's a 135er.
Okay, so he's a small dude.
Yeah, small dude.
Cool.
But still, we're trying to bring that bazooka power into that the lighter weights, which he has. And he's fighting a good American kid, and Johnny Bam Bam something. But it's going to be a good fight. And I'm excited to have Robin Black and John Ramdeen there as well.
Yeah, calling the action, yeah.
Yeah, and I know TriStar there is there. So I'm hoping maybe in Montreal I can see some of those guys as well. So it could be a good trip overall.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to say you could ask Cajun Johnson if he's going to be there, but he's going to be in London this weekend.
Okay.
Because he's a TriStar guy.
Okay, cool.
At least most of the time he is. I think sometimes he trains out on the West Coast. So, Nick Newell came back. This is what a lot of people are talking about right now. If you don't know who Nick Newell is, he's a mixed martial artist who only has one hand, I guess. I mean, he has half of an arm and a full arm.
Yeah, I think it's just below the elbow, right?
Yeah, just below the elbow. Yeah. And he does use that appendage to his advantage.
Oh, yeah.
He throws elbows. He gets chokes, grabs onto it to secure actually tight chokes,
beautiful.
Because he's learned how to use that to his advantage. I mean, obviously not having the hand is a bit of a disadvantage as well, but he's been able to figure out ways to utilize what he does have in order to maximize his potential in the cage. Was retired for a little bit, has come back, looked good in his return. An article came out from MMA Junkie by Ben Folks, who I respect a lot, and his podcast, the Co-Main Event Podcast, is a weekly listen for me. But he quoted Dana White back in 2012. Now, Dana White in 2012 was kind of against it and, you know, said, I don't know who's going to sanction this guy and all that. But also in 2012, he was against women fighting in the UFC. So a lot has changed in those, I guess, 6 years now almost since he was quoted about Nick Newell. And in this WME era, or Endeavor era, rather, I think that having a guy like Nick Newell is good for business. I think it makes for good television. But the one thing that kind of makes me hesitate is his biggest opponent to date by far is Justin Gaethje, who really beat him up.
Yeah, I think it was second round finish.
Yeah, but that was a lopsided affair. That being said, Justin Gaethje would beat a lot of lower end lightweights
Absolutely.
In the UFC up in the same manner.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to take anything away from Nick Newell. He hasn't beaten any UFC caliber fighters in my opinion, but I don't think that he would be outmatched by some of the lower-end guys, like guys that Sage Northcutt's been beating.
Yeah, that's the talk, the fight you're talking about.
Well,
CM Punk?
I wrote Sage Northcutt on Twitter, because if you think about Sage Northcutt versus Nick Newell on Fox, if you can put that on Big Fox, that's an interesting attraction fight. Because
it makes sense.
Yeah, Northcutt draws. Newell and his story will draw for sure.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. People are going to be interested in seeing what he can do. People used to watch Jim Abbott pitch back in the day. Do you remember Jim Abbott?
I heard of
he was a one-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
He used to rest
his switch gloves, and he'd always switch gloves.
Yeah, on every pitch.
Yep.
And he was really something to watch. But Nick Newell, I think, is a guy that I think can hang with some of those guys. Now, that being said, Dana White's hesitation back in 2012 was that he wasn't sure if it would get commissioned, which I think it would, given his resume at this point in time.
Absolutely.
I think it would almost be discrimination to not let him be commissioned in different states. And, you know, it's hard to say that the UFC would be discriminating by not bringing him in. You do need to see something that shows that he's able to beat a UFC caliber opponent, which I don't think he has done yet. Someone suggested putting him on the Dana White Contender Series, which I think is a great idea.
I like that idea as well.
I think it exposes him to the UFC brass, and if he can get a win there, he'll undoubtedly have earned his place in the UFC. And then, of course, they're just signing him outright. So you know Nick Newell. You've chatted with him on many occasions.
Yeah.
And you also told me before the show started, you were put in a predicament, so to speak, against a fighter that did not have all of their appendages as well.
Yeah, well, first on Nick, I think it's an incredible athlete, and he's shown it. But if they give him a fighter who's, you know, like a UFC caliber, and if he wins, there's no doubt about it. But you remember, he might not be in it for to win a championship, a UFC championship. It's more about building him and building himself, and I think it's only fair that we give him a shot. We don't have to give him, you know, a top 10 in the division. Give him something. Let him work up. Let him see his story, because obviously it's amazing and it's an inspiring story for, you know, those following and watching. So I think 100% he should get signed to the UFC. If you watch his Instagram, like, he does things. He just adapts. I mean, just because he wasn't, you know, fortunate to have both hands like we do, but he makes it work, and it's just that much more inspirational. Like, seeing him do push-ups, you know, he does it off medicine balls, and he squats amazingly. His strength and conditioning program's on point. So he has what it takes to do it, and again, it's not that he can't do it. He adapts, you know, to everything in all of his training, but... back to the story, when I was fighting, there was one of the top kickboxers at the time, you know, I would say more North American and locally, was Baxter. They called him the One-Armed Bandit. And he was knocking people out. Like, he was really talented. And I was coming up the ranks, and they wanted us to match us. And it was kind of like, it's hard. And I think the same situation with Nick, because a lot of fighters look at it as a lose-lose situation. Because on one point, if you win... You know, like, it's sad to say, but, like, you beat someone who's not as, you know,
technically
has a disadvantage. Yep. From you. And then if you lose to him, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. You're like, well, you just lost to someone who has a disadvantage, so it kind of lowers your stock a little bit. So I think a lot of fighters are really hesitant to take these kind of fights.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, like you mentioned, if you lose to someone like Nick Newell, people are like, oh, well, this guy just lost to somebody who doesn't have
two arms.
And
your stock definitely goes down after that, right?
But I think it shouldn't.
It shouldn't, because he's a well-respected athlete who has a, you know, great credential. So it shouldn't really. But that's the mentality.
But there's also, I mean, the UFC does have leverage over certain fighters. Like, if you've lost two or three in a row, and they call you and say, "We want you to fight Nick Newell," and you say, "Well, I'm not really comfortable with that," it's like, okay, well, we have to cut you then. This is the fight that we want you to take.
And well, if you want a strong arm,
yeah,
for sure.
But if you have to decide then between getting cut or fighting again. Then you're going to want to fight again. Like, I mean, for example, Thibaut Gouti, who Sage Northcutt recently defeated, and it was a very close fight. He had lost, I think, four in a row. But the reason for losing those four in a row is because he kept taking short notice fights, because they kept saying, if you take the short notice fight, we're going to give you another fight. We promise.
Yeah.
So eventually they gave him a full camp, and he ended up beating an opponent. I can't recall who it was. And then he got the fight with Northcutt, which he lost, which I thought he did really well in that fight, and I actually thought he had won the fight.
Yep.
But I think that that those are the kind of situations that they can put their fighters in, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's great. I think someone will fight it, for sure. A UFC opportunity, guys will jump on and take it, but, I mean, it's still a very difficult fight from any fighter, but Nick 100% deserves to be in the UFC.
Well, I'd like to talk to Cajun Johnson when he joins us later on. He's in the same weight class. He's a very pro fighter and fighter's rights.
It'd be very
I'd love to hear his take on it.
Yeah.
And he has a podcast of his own. He might have touched on it already, but if you don't listen to his podcast and you listen to just this podcast, then I'd love to find that out from him. And you should listen to Cajun's podcast. He's a very smart guy. I love talking to that guy. He just has a really good positive energy around him. CM Punk says he's fighting in Chicago. Will it be against you? Have they called you yet?
No, not yet. I'm waiting. My phone's on ring here. I'm waiting. No, not me yet. Oh, man. I wish it was. It would be so fun. It would be way too fun. I don't know.
If they said, like, we'll give you, like, $15,000 to take that fight, you're in?
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
Because it's easy.
So monetarily, you're not that concerned about what they offer.
No, look what's going to come out of it.
Yeah.
There's so much publicity, and I've always wanted to, you know, test myself in MMA. Go for it, man. I won't even wrestle. I won't even practice wrestling. I'll just go in with just what I know now.
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather styles. Just go in and that's it.
Well, signs are pointing towards Mike Jackson, who I've met on multiple occasions. He covers the sport as well as competes in kickboxing. And he mentioned yesterday, I'm going to, you know, beat him up and then go out and get a slice of pizza. And I responded and said, it would be awesome if you held your after party at like a 24-hour pizza joint. He goes, that's what I'm going to do. Good idea.
There you go.
So Mike's a good dude, and he's a qualified, as qualified at least as CM Punk. He's you know, competed in kickboxing and MMA before. I mean, they put out a line for that fight if Mike Jackson does get the fight, and Mike is a 2-1 favorite. More of a stand-up fighter, of course, with his kickboxing background, but I don't know, man. The CM Punk thing, you know, how do you keep Nick Newell out of the UFC and promote CM Punk?
Oh, put them together.
Because, you know, if people are complaining about CM Punk and the UFC signs Nick Newell to be kind of an attraction, you can't really have it both ways, right?
Yeah. Well, I think CM Punk should fight someone like Nick too, then. Why not? I mean, it's a fine fight. But CM Punk, I don't know, if he loses this one, is he done?
Yeah, oh, you got to believe he's done. And I think that they've kind of waited for him to have another fight so that he can train for a while and then do it in Chicago in his backyard.
Yeah. What do you think? What's your take on it from the UFC perspective? Does it make the UFC look bad?
I think we've kind of gone over this before, but I don't think it does. I mean, I think that in the eyes of many people, it does. In my eyes, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because this is a business. You know, people always bring up, oh, well, it's bad for the sport. The UFC is not a sport.
Yeah.
I say it on every podcast.
Yeah,
the UFC is a business. They're a promotional vehicle, and they're, you know, in business to make money. Now, let's say that there was a band, for example, that had a lot of bad publicity about them, but they had a lot of fans. And you're a concert promoter, and you can make money off of that band. You're going to book that band.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. You're in business to make money.
No, I hear you.
So, you know, I can't fault the UFC for doing this. And if people do fault them for doing it and say, oh, it's become too Hollywood and too much of a circus, MMA was born on being a circus.
Yeah.
We used to have Minhwa Man fighting Hong Man Choi.
Hong Man Choi.
I mean, keep in mind, this sport was built on weird matchups, on soccer kicks, on all kinds of wacky stuff. So in order to say that this is pure sport, and believe me, I believe mixed martial arts as a form is a pure sport.
Yeah.
But to say that the UFC needs to cater to those who believe that it's pure sport, the UFC doesn't do anything like any other sport.
I agree.
Like they pay people different salaries for every different fight. They promote fights in different locales all the time. You don't see baseball games. It's like, oh yeah, we're gonna hold this baseball game in Chicago, and then next week we're gonna hold a baseball game. This series is gonna be between Chicago and Arizona. It's gonna take place in LA. It just doesn't happen that way. The UFC is a unique. It's more like the WWE than anything else in terms of how they run as an operation.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I don't think you always need the best athletes in the sport to put it on. I mean, in soccer, we all watch, you know, the World Cup, we all watch Champions League, and we all watch different level of soccer. If you're a passionate fan of the sport, I think you should be intrigued by these matchups and want more of them.
And really, if you're a fighter on that card, let's say you're Curtis Blaydes and you're fighting in Chicago, you're from Chicago, but you know that an extra 200,000 people, for example, will buy the pay-per-view because CM Punk's on it. Now, of course, those numbers are that's just an arbitrary number. You should be praising the idea of having CM Punk on the same card as you, because it's going to give you more eyeballs.
More eyes, better for the sport, more attraction. And in any situation, I think it's great. Even from a glory perspective, like a lot of times, you know, I know our new CEO, Marshall, isn't really into it, but you know, a lot of it's bringing in UFC fighters to kickboxing because we feel the eyes, you know, will bring more attention to the sport.
And I remember Goldberg at a time.
Yeah, Goldberg was doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Tyson was even helping us to do promotion stuff. Not fighting, but he was doing promo stuff.
I think Goldberg was
wanted
close to
a fight.
Signing
he wanted a fight, which was amazing, and he wanted it because he's a big Muay Thai practitioner and a good friend of mine. So, I mean, I'm glad, you know. That they're looking at options that way.
You think he could have won 100 fights in a row in glory like he did in the WCW?
I don't know. It'd be close. Depends who we match him with.
We're not even at glory 100 yet, are we? No.
No, not yet. He'll have to do like a three-man tournament every event.
Yeah.
For the next
Who's next?
Yeah. I think it'd be awesome, but I mean, it's amazing. But other people would say, for example, let's use the glory example. If a UFC fighter comes in, they got cut from the UFC or something, which means they're not the biggest high-profile athlete. But if they come in and now start beating the kickboxers, I think it makes us look worse, because it's like, hey, these MMA guys, we're trying to separate ourselves from this MMA, being like, hey, look how exciting. You know, you guys don't like ground here. Come here. And then if they beat us glory athletes, it might make kickboxing look bad. So I think that's the other side of it. But, man, the more eyes, the better, in my opinion.
You know, another topic that's come up recently that I'm really surprised about is Krokop fighting in Bellator while he's under a USADA suspension. He got a 2-year suspension from USADA for performance-enhancing drugs. The UFC released, like, allowed him to get his release and fight in Ryzen in Japan. And now he's going to be fighting in London for Bellator while technically under suspension. This doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me either.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to follow the USADA suspensions, but it sets a really bad precedent. And with, from what I understand, it's going to be run by the Mohegan Sun Commission, Mike Mazzulli and the Mohegan Sun Commission. How can they not stand by that suspension? Like, these governing bodies should be standing by these USADA suspensions, even though they're not necessarily enforceable unless you're a UFC athlete or in the UFC or in the USADA testing pool anymore.
Is the Mohegan Sun on, like, native grounds? Is that why? Or?
Technically, but they usually do. You know, if they usually will honor any suspension that a governing body has put forth.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can get a medical suspension from Nevada, but does the Chicago state allow you to fight if you're under suspension with Nevada? Usually
they work in.
So I don't understand why that's happening.
Yeah, it's very confusing to me. And the reason why is, even from Bellator's perspective, from a liability standpoint, something bad happens to Roy Nelson because, you know, Krokop's jacked, even though they are doing drug testing, standardized drug testing.
But on the day of the fight,
the IQ test,
like we talked about.
But if something bad happened to, you know, Roy Nelson, let's say he breaks his leg or something, like, is Bellator liable, and is the commission liable because they let a guy who's been suspended for performance enhancing drugs compete?
Well, their justification is going to be, well, we're testing him after, and he came back clean. Yeah. That's going to be their justification.
It's just confusing.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, and I think that's what Mark Hunt came out about, right? All the guys he fought, you know, and he was getting these losses to, were on steroids. So he's like, what the heck is this? So are they real losses? And now he's, it's going to become an issue. It's definitely going to become an issue. Like, you got to remember, the guy you're fighting, if he's juiced up, he's hitting harder, he's recovering better. That's your brain damage now. Just because this guy can hit harder now, it's affecting you as an athlete. So they got to be more particular on that. They got to bite
down. Krokop's out there destroying guys in Japan now. All of a sudden, he's back.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
I know the sport's changing that way, but also, I mean, it's been part of the sport for so long, and a lot of people don't realize that it has been part of the sport. I think a lot of people thought just because drug testing happened that athletes weren't doing it. I mean, it was happening a lot more than people think, so I think it's just going back to the way it was before. So, I mean, people now, it's an uproar, but that's how it was.
What kind of drug testing do they have in Glory?
They just do post-fight as well.
Okay.
If that, sometimes, you know? I mean, depending where and when, it's all different. But
did you ever face anybody that you thought was using? Like, they were just hitting harder, recovering better?
I don't know. I'm a strength-based athlete. Like, so I always prided myself on being the stronger, more physical guy. But there's sometimes, like, you've seen guys in kickboxing that, like, were 155ers, and then all of a sudden, they're these big 170.
Like Overeem, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a 205,
yeah, there's questions. Like, I mean, there's a few guys you'll always, and I mean, it's easier to get your hands on steroids in other parts of the world as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
you need beef in Mexico.
Yeah,
now,
there you
now
go.
You've got clenbuterol in your system.
That's ridiculous.
Well, that's what's happening.
I know.
Guys, yeah.
We're losing, you know, good boxing matches from it. Like,
we didn't lose the Canelo fight, but,
no,
you know.
Too much money to not lose that. But, I don't know. It's things. I'm all torn about it. I think if all the athletes are on the same page, it's different. But then it's not fair to the athletes who want to do this sport clean when there's so many who are doing it with performance enhancing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can go off one way. I can go off the other way.
Someone who's employed by Glory, it's hard for you to, you know, really
to say. Yeah, but I mean, I still believe a lot of the athletes are in all of the sports. It's just. Mm-hmm. With USADA, you saw a huge change, and that's, you can't deny that.
You saw guys shrink.
You saw guys shrink. You saw guys who were undefeated lose every single fight after. So you've seen, you know, what it's done to a lot of guys and a lot of careers. So you can't deny it.
The weird thing is, you notice that with people that may have been on performance-enhancing drugs, there's a really big mental edge that you get from using it.
Oh,
for
sure.
From knowing that it's in your system.
You have more testosterone. You're more manly.
I just mean just the knowledge that you have taken it and that you're bigger and stronger and faster.
Yeah.
That in your mind is
a huge edge. Yeah, it's definitely a huge edge. But
if I was a coach, I'd just give guys placebos and be like, listen, these
absolutely.
You'll pass every test, I promise.
I say it all the time. Have you seen, remember Space Jam?
Yeah.
with Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And he had the special water. Yeah. He put special water on the water bottle. He gave it to all his guys, and they came back, and they won at halftime. Mm. It's huge. Placebo is huge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, there you go. Aaron, you're on
to
something.
You should start a nutrient company that you give your guys at the gym.
Well, what do you think?
Placebos.
Well, what do you think supplements are? I bet you all those supplements people are taking aren't doing anything for you.
They're mostly alfalfa powder. Yeah. From studies that they've done.
And they're all these supplements are made from the same factory. The only difference is a label thrown on it and a whole bunch of junk and fillers. And everyone's like, oh, my God, you know, I've started taking this, you know, ZF4, F3, too. And, oh, man, my workouts are crazy. I'm like, no. No, it's not.
But if you want to think that, that's good.
But if you want to think it, it's great.
That's why it's working for you. The supplements are working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's amazing. Even when people ask me, they're like, hey, like, I don't agree with running, right? Everyone's like, oh, you know, you're a whole professional athlete. You never ran. No, I didn't run. I followed energy systems, and I've talked about this a lot in my career and on my social media. But the issue is, if you run and you think it's working, it's going to work. If you're a person who, you know, sprints every day, yeah, that's going to work from a science perspective, but as long as you believe it works, it works. Like, I even have, you know, conversations all the time with these little fads that were coming out and things like that. I don't know, some things, like, my dad always jokes about it, but he's like, if your toes hurt, you know, touch your nose. And everyone's like, my dad's like, I don't get it. Everyone's like, just take the attention away from something, you know, like, it's all in your head. If you can change your mindset, and it's fine. So, I mean, placebos are huge. Placebos are huge.
But you think CM Punk will be using some supplements that will help his brain?
Help his brain?
Like, just help him think that he's in the game?
I hope so. Duke Roof is a good coach. Yeah, maybe he's in his ear.
Did you end up watching the corner on?
No, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I want you to do that and tell me what you think next
time. That's pretty cool. I still think they stole my idea because I wanted to do that.
Well, they've been doing it for a while on Fight Pass.
Yeah.
Like, you can go back and access from, like, years ago. Corner audio.
Okay. So because what happens is when I cornered in the UFC, they give all of the main quarters the lav mic. So that's how they get their audio for in between rounds and stuff like that. So they must record the whole thing, and then they keep the whole audio file, corner. And then they do it.
Yeah. Which is smart. Yeah, it's cool. It's really interesting to watch. I remember watching the GSP Bisping because I wanted to hear what Freddie Roach said to him between rounds. I couldn't really make out what he was saying, but Freddie Roach said that he had given him a tip about, like, the lead, I think it was the lead left hook.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something along those lines. As well. Yeah, and I tried to hear what it was, and I couldn't really make it out, but it was interesting listening to Faraz. I mean, yelling stuff out in French, obviously, as well, but hearing him talk to Freddie during the fight and hearing him talk to Donaher during the fight, it's just interesting.
And do they have a cam on the corner as well?
No, okay. just voice.
Yeah, a cam could be cool, too. Just to see the fighters' reactions. They always show it once in a while, but I think it's super cool because you get to see how coaches react as well. Coaches can be so different. One coach can be so calm and relaxed. The other one's screaming, yelling, sweating, losing their voice. So I think it's nice to see that, the emotion of the corner as well.
Yeah, like Greg Jackson's fun to listen to because he's like, okay, buddy, you're doing great. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, very calm and helps them take their mind off of the fight. And
yeah, no, I yell. I'll lose my voice.
Yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And it's funny,
but
too, because
if it works, right?
Yeah, because some people, like, they'll film the fight and a lot of times I'm so absorbed in the corner that I'm not focusing on anything else. So when all you hear, the arena could be quiet, silent, and then all you hear is me yelling and screaming at the top of my lungs.
Do you tell guys that they've won rounds?
Depends. Depends what I want from them. Mm-hmm. Depends.
So you've got to really get in their head.
Yeah, some people like to hear it, and I think it's dependent on the fighter as well.
It changes your strategy.
Some people don't want to hear it. Some people want to hear, okay, you're down two rounds, you got to win this by. Some people need to hear it. Some people, you know, you need to lie to them. Like, good job, even though you weren't sure if they won or not, you need to keep that positivity in the corner.
Yeah, because that's just how they operate.
Yeah.
They don't want the second.
And everybody's different. Some people like different things, so it's just important to know your fighter.
Yeah, for sure. It's always interesting to listen to that corner audio. I should do it more often, actually. There's certain fights that I want to go back to and listen to. UFC 224 and 225, the main events have officially been announced. You've got Nunes versus Pennington. You know, Pennington was upset that they were thinking of giving the fight to Cyborg and scrapping her fight because they had, I guess, promised her that she was going to get this opportunity. It does, you know, it does come into fruition. That is going to happen in Rio, UFC 224. And Whitaker Romero confirmed for UFC 225, from what I understand, or at least it's scheduled. So that should be... Those are both very good main events, very interesting to watch. Nunes Pennington, I'm very interested to see what Raquel Pennington looks like after kind of a year and a half layoff.
Yeah, no, she's been off for a little bit, but I think what I've been reading about is Nunes is just excited because with the Cyborg talk, like she said, when she accepted that fight right away, she was there was nothing in her division, right? So she was like, oh, I'm more intrigued in getting fights because she doesn't want to have that long layoff. So she says the division's building for her, and so she's happy to stay there and defend and build her division up.
Absolutely. And she's Nunez is one of my favorite fighters to watch. I'm always interested in watching her development. Whitaker Romero should be very good. Romero on the Joe Rogan show was interesting. If you listen,
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, listen to it.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
His, you know, whenever you hear Cuban athletes tell their story, it's always interesting how they defected and all of that.
What was crazy to me when he was explaining out how they selected people for the Olympics, and you know, they he basically just said, you do this tryout. He's like, yeah, well, you're better for wrestling. You might be better for boxing. You're better for Taekwondo. So then they would pick you from a young age. And then even when you go to the camps, he was saying, like, you're sleeping in a room with all your opponents.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, plays games with you sometimes.
And the person that is like the best gets better food.
The better food, they eat better. So it's not, they're not really intrigued by like the, you know, the fame. They're like, hey, I get to eat better food. I live somewhere nicer than everybody else. And only certain that the top three can go to the Olympic training centers and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it must work because look at the amount of athletes that have come out of it.
And God, Joel is a beast. He's just a huge guy.
Yeah. And at the age he's doing it. But they also said they don't really know the age of some of these guys, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Because, you know, things are a little bit different over there.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They mentioned Victor Ortiz and how
It's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. So it's that was certainly intriguing. So if you have some time, check out Joe's podcast. Because and if you're listening to this, I'm guessing you probably listened to Joe's podcast already. But
absolutely.
It's certainly interesting. UFC in London, England this weekend, available on Fight Pass. It's not on TSN, unfortunately, but certainly a card worth watching. I actually think there are a lot of really interesting fights on this card. Two Canadians on the card who we'll be talking to later on in the show, Cajun Johnson and Hakeem Dawodu. Hakeem's been on the show before, but now he's making his debut, and I'm interested to hear what his training at SBG in Ireland was like. He went out there to train with Conor McGregor, his team. So that should be an interesting conversation. Volkov and Verdum, I think, is a very interesting fight, but I think that, you know, I think Verdum is a tier above Volkov at this point in time. And if Volkov gets this win, it'll certainly push him closer to a title fight than not. Obviously, Verdum is a guy that he told me personally he thinks he's going to be champion by the end of the year, and he said it without blinking.
he's
convinced of it, and he's an older guy, he's 40 now, but. He hasn't shown any signs of slowing down.
Yeah, and what was his most recent loss? Alistair Overeem?
It was Overeem,
but it was
a fight
controversial,
I thought he won.
Right?
Yeah, I thought he won that fight. Or it was a draw, because I thought the third round was a 10-8. And some of the judges didn't see it that way. So, and I actually thought Verdum won the first round, too, which a lot of people didn't. But maybe I should watch it again and take a second look. But, before that, his loss was to Stipe. So, I mean, he's losing the top-tier competition. But since then, he's reeled off two wins in a row against Walt Harris and the knockout win over...
Tybura.
Marcin Tybura. See, your memory's getting better than mine, Joe.
No, I'm looking on. I'm looking
online.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
No.
My bad.
Oh, I didn't have to tell you. Yeah, it was all from my memory.
Marcin Tybura. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You took some Alpha Brain before the show.
That's
now you're remembering stuff.
We're not sponsored by Onnit, so not yet.
That's true. Not yet.
We should be.
That. Yeah. Jimmy Manua and Jan Blachowicz, the rematch that really nobody wanted to see, but it's happening this weekend. The first match was kind of uneventful. Manua, a pretty big favorite in the spot, and it's interesting to see because Manua's kind of fallen off the map after his loss to Uzdemir. So we'll see what Jimmy Manua has left in the tank in his home country.
Yeah, and his criticism is he's just having that hard time beating the top of the division. I mean, he does well when against certain guys, but... I mean, his losses just against Ozdemir, Anthony Joshua, Gustafsson. So he just has
Anthony Johnson.
Anthony Johnson.
Anthony Joshua would be an interesting fight, though.
Oh yeah, that would be good.
He was trying to line that up, actually, Manoa.
Was he?
Wanted to fight. He wanted to fight Anthony Joshua in boxing.
No, I've just been on this boxing tip lately.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, I'm into this Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua fight.
Yeah, I think everybody should get into that.
I know.
Hopefully Joshua wins his fight and you can make that happen.
Yeah, I hope so.
Wilder was a lot of fun. That Wilder-Ortiz fight was one of the best heavyweight boxing fights I've seen in I can't remember how long.
That's what they were saying. Yeah, that's why we think Wilder deserves that shot. But Joshua's got to beat Parker first.
I was surprised Wilder was actually up on the cards when they revealed them at the end.
Yeah, that was a big criticism, too.
Yeah. You never know.
I mean,
that's the thing about boxing I don't get. And whenever I score fights... In boxing, I don't really know what I'm talking about.
I don't even know with boxing. Like, I'll totally, like, my Canelo Triple G was totally off. I thought Canelo did a lot better than most people think.
And I thought Triple G destroyed him.
Yeah, I thought Canelo's counterfighting was doing a lot better than people thought. And I think people were just valuing Triple G's pressure. But I don't know. Like, I mean, I was totally off. I gave Canelo a little bit more credit than most people did. But, I mean, yeah, it's so hard. They give a lot of draw rounds, and I don't know what they see. But, yeah, boxing scoring is impossible.
Is TKO on at the same time as this card? It's like a 3 in the afternoon main card. Or is it on right afterwards?
Maybe right after.
Yeah, it might be right after. So if you're on Fight Pass, you can stick around and watch
My guy's the third fight of the card,
cool.
So it'll
right.
be on
might,
an early.
I'm stick around and watch that. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Tom Dukinwa making his return after a setback against Cody Stamann, who, you know, Cody looked good against Caraway. So it shows that Cody was, you know, as high level as he thought he, you know, as he thought he was, obviously. And Dukinwa, considered one of the biggest prospects in MMA, will be taking on Tarion Ware, a former LFA. I'm not sure if he was an LFA champion or competed for the title, but a very fun fighter to watch, Tarion Ware. But it's the type of fight that's tailor-made for Dukinwa. Stand-up affair, going to showcase his striking. And I think Dukinwa is able to put Ware away. But Ware is a really tough out and a really, really tough competitor, so I don't want to write him off.
Yeah, it seems Dukinwa was that striking advantage. Well, more than half of his wins are by knockout. So, yeah, I'm excited to see him.
Yeah, we'll see if he can bounce back. I got to speak with him before his last fight, and he's a nice guy. Leon Edwards, Peter Sabata. Peter Sabata is always, it seems like a different Peter Sabata shows up to every fight. Sometimes he looks amazing, and sometimes he looks very beatable. Leon Edwards, meanwhile, has been reeling off a huge win streak, thinks he should be ranked, and I think he is ranked now, actually. I think he moved into the rankings.
Yeah, they have him at 15.
Yeah, he moved into the rankings, well-deserved, and he just seems to be on a tear. So I think he beat Albert Tumanov recently, which is a big win. So we'll see what Leon Edwards can do against Peter Sabata.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with him last time. I think he was, from my understanding, he was so dominant in the early rounds, and then he suffered, and I think one of the rounds... I don't know, he was a little off or, like, got caught with some sort of submission. Not some sort of submission, some takedowns, but I can't remember, but I was impressed with him.
I think I must be, like, a UFC hipster. Like, I love watching these prelim fights with guys that, you know, you're just learning about or you've seen once or twice. Like, Oliver Enkamp was fun to watch last time, even though he lost. I'm interested to see what he looks like in his second UFC fight. Hakeem Duwadu, obviously, I'm excited for.
One I'm excited for, too, obviously.
Cajun Stevie Ray, to me, should be on the main card, not the first fight of the night, but... That's the way they've got it set up. Stevie Ray is a very fun fighter. Cajun Johnson with an unlikely win over Adriano Moraes, where he was a big underdog, the biggest underdog on the card, actually, won in the first round. Nasrat Haqparast and this newcomer, Narumani, was the Cage Warriors featherweight champion. Conor McGregor back in the day had that same title.
Huh.
So he hasn't fought in about a year, and it's going to be interesting to see what he can do in the UFC, taking the fight on short notice.
So out of the earlier fights, which fight should I watch out for, besides Hakeem Duwadu?
I think Cajun and Stevie Ray is going to be a really high-level fight for the first fight on the night. I mean, Godbeer Sosnovsky should be a slugfest at heavyweight. And this John Phillips-Charles Byrd fight, John Phillips is an interesting guy. Did you hear the story of him? He lives in like a caravan in John Kavanaugh's backyard.
I heard of it,
yeah.
But I didn't connect that that's who it
yeah,
was.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see how he does. You know, this is these kind of cards are a lot of fun for me. I love learning about these guys and you know, looking and seeing what, you know, who has a really good future and who can be a competitor, you know, a competitor that's going to move up and become a contender one day.
Yeah, but a lot of people are thinking the opposite, right? A lot of people are thinking it's, you know, too many cards, not enough talent on it. There's a lot of people we don't know in here. But I'm with you. I think these fights are important, and I say it every single time. And I know a lot of people think it's just the way of hyping up a card, but a lot of times it's these guys who need to build their name that put on these exciting fights. So...
I always wonder if the UFC has enough of a core audience that they could do more cards like this that are kind of up and coming guys like Strikeforce. If you remember, had Strikeforce challengers, guys coming up. Like I would love to see the UFC do smaller events, smaller cage, smaller venues. You know, 4,000 to 6,000 people. I know that they're a big show and they want to treat themselves like a big show, but I think if they did like midweek cards, smaller venues, smaller locales. Draw people in that are hungry for the UFC in a market, like go to Montana or something, go to places where you have smaller venues. I think that would be a lot of fun. I think that the UFC fans would get a lot out of it. You start the card a little bit earlier in the day, go to different places all over the world, you know, Thailand, things like that, and just do smaller venues, smaller cards with some of these kind of names where you can learn more about up-and-coming guys.
Do you think that was their idea with Dana White Contender Series?
I think so, but Dana White Contender Series is a very low-budget affair because it's inside the Ultimate Fighter gym. It's only four fights. It's a different format, and it's a format that I love, where at the end Dana picks two guys or girls, guy or girl, whatever, to join the UFC based on their performance, which I think adds a really cool element
to it.
Oh,
for sure.
I love that. I'm a big fan of the Dana White Contender Series. I was really big on that. And I also think that even if guys didn't get a contract, like guys like Ton Lee was on it, and he didn't get a contract, and then he went to LFA, and he just won recently, you can bring that guy back into the UFC, and people can be like, oh, yeah, I remember when he was on
the Contender
Series.
I remember him from the show.
Yeah.
I think it's important. With Glory, we did a Road to Glory Contender Series, where we have an eight-man tournament. The winner got a Glory contract.
Yeah.
We did one in each weight division. I think it's fun, and it gives fighters the... you know, the ability to have something to work forward to. I mean, if you're someone who's just starting pro and you're thinking, you know, it's going to take me so long to get to the UFC, but these little types of shows, it really is going to motivate guys to want to stay in MMA, build careers, and it's just that much closer grab to a UFC shot.
Yeah, and then the big takeaway that I had from the Dana White Contender Series is guys are going for the kill.
Because
it's based on performance, I think adds another cool element to it.
Absolutely. I know they do that with money a lot of times, but for an up-and-coming guy to have a shot in the UFC, heck yeah, you're going to go in there and show it all.
I find that's the odd thing about the UFC is a lot of, they always lead pay-per-views with title fights, but a lot of these competitors, whether, you know, it's exciting or not, their goal is to retain the title.
Yeah.
So, like the Nunes Shevchenko fight, a lot of people thought was kind of boring. I didn't. The different Tyron Woodley fights, you know, kind of playing it safe. But then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum. It's the very lowest end of the sport, and these guys are going for broke.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, you're promoting your best fights, but there's not really any incentive for them to finish other than to, of course, retain their title. They're almost better off playing it safe, game planning, coming up with a way that they can play to their strengths and their opponent's weaknesses, sometimes without even finishing them. Like Stipe versus Ngannou is a good example.
Yeah. No, I think it's, again, when you have these higher-level guys and the Floyd Mayweathers, if anybody watched Floyd Mayweather, the first thing they're going to say, oh, it was such a boring fight, because you're not looking at what's happening. Once you understand the X's and the O's in the fight, you realize how amazing the fights actually were. Like, I mean, my criticism, everyone's like the Tyron Woodley and Wonder Boy. Yes, it was a very technical match. It's very hard timing an issue, but you have to commit sometimes. You have to go. Like you're going to say a million times, there is an entertainment value that you have to commit to a little bit more. I think guys now are, I've seen it in kickboxing too much, where if you're maybe not winning the fight, instead of giving me that effort, that energy, that blast of like, go for it, what are you doing? Like, I mean, is it that's what I want to see more of. If one guy is dominating, you're losing, like, you have to go for it. I want to see guys go for more. Make it mean something for you. Like, you know, my example I would bring was that my Nicky Holtzkin fight. You got to, like, yeah, I got caught and it didn't work out for me, but you have to go for it. If there's something on the line, you need to commit. That was my only big criticism for the Woodley Wonder Boy, but... I mean, yeah, I think the young guys have to perform, and I still think the guys in the top of the division still need to understand, like you said, it's entertainment.
Yeah, and the tough part for the challengers in those divisions is that they're not usually used to five-round fights.
Yeah.
So they have to conserve their energy, and they have to play it a little bit more safe because they don't want to gas out. So it's interesting. It's just interesting that there's that dynamic where at the very bottom, you're seeing more exciting fights sometimes
and
than title
fights. It sounds weird to me, but I'm all for it. In order to make fights more exciting, I believe, you know, maybe we do 3-minute rounds in the UFC. Do we really need 5-minute rounds? Some people say yes, some people no. But it might encourage people to go and strike and go for knockouts more, which increases the sport. I also don't mind what they do sometimes on the tough series where they'll only do 2 rounds. If you win both of those rounds, there's no third round.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to win, you got to commit a little bit more. I don't know. There's different ways to build it, but I can go on
but
forever.
The problem with it is liability. Because
yeah.
if you're rewarding people for knocking people out, you're putting people's health at risk technically by rewarding that kind of thing, right? Like that's the
but
big issue.
But that's the whole point of entertainment in this sport,
true.
Right? The
yeah.
entertainment is but, based on someone yeah. else's health and suffering.
Right.
Which is the sad part about it, right?
But it's hard to admit to that. It's hard to say this is what our MO is. But they do give out performance bonuses. They used to call them knockout of the night, submission of the night, but they stopped as a result of that because there's a perceived liability.
There's a whole bunch of things. Like, even when people will come and like, oh, you know, I'm going to battle, I'm going to war, and you're like, man, you're not no war veteran to understand what that means. Like, don't stop comparing it. Or, like, it's tough. It's really tough because this sport, in all combat sports, the person who hurts the other person, you know, more, cuts them up more, hurts them as bad as possible is the one's going to be cheering. After someone gets knocked out, it's, hey, everyone's cheering for the guy standing. The guy on the floor, everyone's like, oh, hurry up, get him off the ground. We got to get the next fight going. I want to go home. But he's unconscious, and everybody wants to speed up the fight. And a lot of times...
Yeah, we got a TV time to hit.
I've been to shows, Aaron, and I'm telling you, it's one of the most disgusting, disturbing things I've ever seen. Like, you go to amateur local shows, and it happened to one of my fighters. My fighter knocked the guy out really badly, and it sucked. And I hated seeing it. And he was literally fell through the ropes. His head was hanging. Jeez. What did I do? I didn't even celebrate. I ran to the guy. I lowered his head. I was yelling at doctors to come. And what did they were trying to do? The first thing they're like, we got to get him off. So they're trying to pick him up. He was unconscious and put him on like the floor or the stage where he was like, I've lost it. I was screaming. I was yelling. People were telling me to relax. It's not my fighter.
Yeah. Not your
but
fighter,
I
yeah.
want to protect this guy. Yeah. Like, why does the show have to go on? Give him another minute to wake up from being unconscious before we start throwing him off so we can get the next fight on. There's a lot of that, and it's sad. So those are the issues that I'm more pissed off about than, you know, seeing the knockout happen in the fight.
Absolutely. That's a scary thing.
Yeah. And afterwards, I mean, what happens after this fighter who gets knocked out? I don't know. Does Dana White call them and ask them if they're okay? Does the backstage doctor worried about their CT scans or their MRIs that come back? No. I want to see an improvement in that way in order to better the athletes.
Amen to that.
Thank you. My rant's done.
Yeah, and then now we go into talking about UFC London again because we've got Cajun Johnson, who joins us on the TSN MMA show. Interested to speak to him about Project Spearhead as well as this upcoming fight against Stevie Ray. So he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
We are now joined by Cajun Johnson, a big Canadian who's won 3 in a row, now fighting Stevie Ray this weekend. Not to be confused with Stevie Ray from Harlem Heat back in the day with wrestling. Stevie Ray from Scotland. So it's nice to have you on the show, Cajun. How's everything going in preparation for this fight this weekend?
It's going awesome, man. I feel phenomenal.
You know, you really stepped up against Adriano Martins, a guy that was pretty much borderline ranked. And you were able to beat him as the biggest underdog on the card in Edmonton. You're taking a pretty big step up as well here with Stevie Ray. I know he was a free agent, but he's coming back to the UFC, and he's replacing an equally tough opponent who stepped out. Is this the level of competition you're hoping to face at this stage of your career?
Oh, definitely. This and higher. I think everything's happening for a reason. I was given the Martins fight for a reason. It was a scary fight, for sure. Guy's a knockout artist. But I knew that I had the skills to beat him, and I'm glad that the stars aligned for that night and everything went to plan. And I have faith that the same thing will happen on Saturday.
So where have you been doing most of your preparation for this particular fight?
The majority of the preparation I did in Vancouver, TriStar Vancouver and New Edge Alliance, my conditioning gym, and the gym that me and my partner Rochelle own. But I did spend 2 weeks at TriStar headquarters in Montreal, which was amazing to go back to that place because I haven't been there in like almost 2 years now. So I went back and I spent the whole 2 weeks in the dorms, which I lived there for a year in one of the hardest years of my life, and it was just cool to go back and in this state now where I'm on a win streak. I have my own gym and. Like, my life is going in the right direction, and it's really cool to go back and to be in that energy a little bit, and also to see all the guys and to get to train under Faraz again. It was a really, really cool experience.
I wanted to get your opinion on Nick Newell. He won a fight last weekend. It was his comeback fight, and he really wants to fight in the UFC, but he only has, I guess, one arm, and the other arm's cut off just above the elbow. A lot of people say that it might be a little bit risky for the UFC to have him in the organization as a result of that. But do you think that he's UFC caliber and should get a spot in the UFC?
That guy's 14-1, man. He's legit. He finishes most guys. Like, give this man a contract. A, that's money. everybody's going to know who he is immediately. He's incredibly marketable. And B, he's gotten to 14-1 in MMA with one arm. Give the man a contract. He deserves it, if anybody does.
I'm actually sitting here with my co-host, Joe Valtellini, and he was offered a fight back when he was it when you were in Glory, Joe? Or
I know it was before Glory. Yeah. It was Baxter Humsby, they called him, the one-arm bandit.
Yeah. And you had some hesitations against
fighting him. Yeah, I didn't want to take it, man. It was like, to me, we kind of looked at it like as a lose-lose because, you know, it's tough for guys wanting to take that fight. And that was my big point. Like, would you take a fight like that? Like, where would your thought process be?
Well, I wouldn't gun for that fight by any means. And he's in my division, right?
So, yeah, that's why we asked.
But that's the thing is we're in the UFC, okay? If you're in the UFC and you wanna pick all your fights, like I understand trying to get fights that are better for you. Don't go and try to get a fight that's not good for you. But you shouldn't be saying no to a whole load of opponents. Like I just talked to one of my buddies, Ryan Hall, and that's what the UFC is telling him, is they can't get him a fight because nobody wants to fight him. Well, too bad. It's at this stage in the game, you shouldn't get all that much of a choice. If their rank makes sense, and they're comparable to you, and you can't just fight them because that's not a good fight for me. Like everybody should be a good fight for you, aren't you? Don't you think they're the best in the world? If you're not, you probably shouldn't be in the UFC because that's what we're all trying to do, is find out that we're the best in the world, right? So if you don't think you can beat Nick Newell, or you're worried that he's got one arm. If you got worried about a guy that's got one arm, you probably shouldn't be in the UFC.
To follow up on what you just said, and I know you're all about fighter rights and really want to help change this business for the better, but the UFC ranking system to me is asinine in the way that it's done. I don't agree with it, and I think that it's massively problematic. And you bring up a big problem, which is guys only wanting to fight guys that are ranked ahead of them, and then guys that are ranked ahead of those people don't want to fight the people that are ranked behind them. So, what would you do to change that?
Well, I think with the outside sanctioning body, when the A-League Act comes in, with the outside sanctioning body, when rank actually matters, and if you beat a certain person, it will actually change your rank. I would imagine that some sort of structure would happen along with that to determine who should be fighting who, and who is eligible to fight who. But like, if you're in a pool of guys that are around, like, I don't know, 10 points away from each other, then it makes sense, forward or backward. It's still going to do great things for your career, right? Like me fighting a guy that's ranked just behind me is going to do just about as much for my career as me fighting a guy that's ranked just above me. As long as when I fight him, I make sure that I come out the clear winner. If I go out and either way, like it's better for me to, even if the guy's ranked behind me, it's better for me to go and knock him out in one round than it is for me to go out and win a split decision against a guy that's barely ranked ahead of me. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
100%.
Here? Like the result, especially for the UFC, the way you do it has much more to do with if you're moving up or not than the person you're beating.
Well, here's the thing that I see with a guy like James Vick, who was pretty upset. He was 7-1, wasn't ranked in the stacked lightweight division. The lightweight division has so many guys that that deserve to be ranked. But then you look at a guy like Alexander Hernandez, has a very impressive debut victory against Beneil Dariush, and now he's ranked in what I think is the most stacked division in the sport. He's now in the top 15. So, do you understand? I guess I can understand why some fighters have some hesitations to, you know, against fighting unranked guys.
Yeah, it's really annoying, actually. It's like, that's the thing, is you can't just rank the top 15, and then if you fight anybody outside that top 15, then it doesn't really affect your ranking. Like, that's the problem. The whole division should be ranked, and not by the UFC, not by the people who stand to make the most money by ranking the most marketable people and keeping out people that may not be as marketable but have way more skill merit. Like, that's the problem.
But the UFC,
right?
aren't necessarily ranking them. Like, the rankings are decided by some journalists.
Yeah, some journalists that the UFC is able to let go at any point and completely banish from ever doing any media on the UFC ever, right? So the journalists, the people that are doing the ranking, still answer directly to the UFC. Right, so the UFC still has far too much influence on the rankings.
Although a lot of these guys that were doing the rankings, their ballots are public. And up until like 2 or 3 weeks ago, Adriano Martins was being ranked in the top 15 in the lightweight division by somebody, and hasn't been in the organization for almost since you fought him. Pretty much, you got to let go.
Yeah.
So you know, it seems like a lot of people that aren't even keeping up with the sport are making these rankings. And again, I think it seems crazy, but who do you think should be in charge of these rankings? If they were going to rank everybody in every division, do you think it should be a panel of people that put out a silent ballot? There should be some accountability.
Sure, like, I don't know exactly. I can't tell you, oh, this person is the man for the job, but I know that it should be an outside independent body. I like Fight Matrix a lot. I like the way that their ranking system works, because it's all just mathematical, right? This person has beaten this person, and there's like this giant formula that they just punch people's stats in, and it shoots out, okay, this guy's 264th in the world.
Yeah, I like Fight Matrix also. I'm on it all the time, and I also like that it ranks people outside of the UFC as well. So it gives a barometer of how people are doing.
If we all just took Fight Matrix, like, the world would be a better place. They control the rankings. Because it's all mathematical.
Yeah, it's done through a formula. Just like the NCAA basketball, I guess, is done kind of the same way.
Yeah, which makes sense, because then it removes human error from it, and it removes human bias and prejudice, right? Because there's giant conflicts of interest if you have any vested interest of anybody that's ranked.
Or their agents. Like, if you're friends with someone's agents and you want to, you want to get access,
totally,
and you have an open ballot, that's my biggest concern with the rankings. You know, it's an open, basically it's transparent, which is good. But at the same time, if you have a friend that's in the UFC and you want to rank them, nothing's stopping you from doing that, which I think is a massive conflict of interest.
Totally.
Well, I love talking to you about these kind of issues. And Project Spearhead is something that you've been working on. I think it's to me is the best way that I guess the fighters have tried to organize so far. It's a very slow process, going through things the right way in a way that has shown and been proven effective before by other organizations and employees. So tell us a little bit about that and where you're at. Are you able to disclose how many people have signed cards as of now?
I'm not able to, no. The cards are confidential, so I don't even know the hard number or who has signed and hasn't signed. I know that we're getting more all the time. Like, we got 4 yesterday. I think a couple more have come in today. So we're on pace. We're on pace to have them all done by September. Well, not all of them in the whole division, but that first 30%.
The 30%, yes.
First 30% marker.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I'd like to applaud you and Leslie Smith. It's very, very good that you guys are doing this sort of thing, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I know that a lot of different organizations have tried to organize in the past and have been unsuccessful, and some of them are still a work in progress. I've noticed the MMAFA have been very loud on Twitter lately. I don't know if that's necessarily
really
the best way to do it.
I used to be in the MMAFA, right? Yeah. They kicked me out or asked me to leave, whatever that really means. We just have a difference of opinion. I believe that a union... They don't, and this is why I don't understand why they won't work with me, or us to begin with, is they don't, the main leader of this group is Carlos Newton. He's not busy on the internet. You'll never talk to the guy really, except for in that group chat, but he is the real influencer behind the MMAFA. And he actually believes that my vision of the union or association that we are attempting to become with Project Spearhead will be a great addition to the cause, and will be good for us when it happens. But he just believes that the Ali Act is more important, which I believe it's more important. But he believes that has to happen first. And because that has to happen first, we can't focus our effort on this union effort as well at the same time, because it takes away, muddies the waters, is what he likes to say. But I think that it's very important to prepare for the future that you're trying to create. So the main portion of the future that we're trying to create will be done through the Alley Act. It's the one that is going to force all these major promotions to have a outside sanctioning body that will rank the fighters and control the title. It's the one that will create transparency in their books so we know what's being made off of us. It will ban coercive contracts. That will do all of these things, right? But once we have that kind of free market, that open market, we still are left with shitty deals, right? We're still left with this, with no points on the new TV deal so far that's coming up. The Alley Act isn't going to help us with that. That needs to be done by a collective voice, a union or an association, we haven't decided yet, of all the fighters that can speak with one voice and bargain and negotiate at the table, right? Because we're just not able to do that for the most part, except for maybe like the Conor McGregors and George St. Pierre's of the world. We have no leverage. They could just cut us. People are getting cut off of wins right now. Chris Weidman just got cut off a win. Right, they almost never even gave Stevie another contract just because he decided to fight his contract out. He only lost one fight to Paul Felder, who's a legit badass and is rising up the ranks. Stevie won five fights in a row before that. Oh no, sorry, he didn't. But he beat Ross Pearson and Joe Lauzon, you know, both of which are still signed to the organization. And then they were not going to give him another contract just because he decided to fight his contract out. Like, it's crazy, the situations that we're dealing with. We obviously need a body. And that, if it happens sooner, great. If it happens after the Alley Act, great. I still think it's necessary and needs to happen. And from what I've heard from all the fighters I'm talking to, they all believe it needs to happen as well. And these are the fighters that are fighting right now, currently. Right? So everybody is very receptive of Project Spearhead so far. The only thing that we're seeing is there's a great deal of fear from the other fighters. Everybody's just worried about losing their job or about being exposed to the organization and being punished in whatever way via rankings or just given more difficult opponents. But that's not really possible because all these cards are confidential. Right. And so there's nobody, like, we don't even know. I don't even know who signed. Right. So your card's not going to be read by anybody that's going to be giving the information to the UFC.
Well, I like the way you guys are going about it. It's in a non-confrontational fashion, and you guys are doing it by the book. So it's good to see. And we are looking forward to watching you on Fight Pass this weekend against Stevie Ray. Two Canadians on the card, Hakeem Douadu making his debut. He'll be on the show a little bit later on. And I want to thank you for your time, Cajun.
Awesome. Thank you, man.
All right, Joe, that was Cajun Johnson. What did you think about what he had to say there? I think he's got a lot of interesting points.
Yeah, he has got a lot of very good points. And
very
I like,
passionate.
Yeah, I like the passion that he has. And I think that the big point that he made that really stood out is people really being scared to really want to come out and stand up for it. And I think a lot of people, you know, want to protect their jobs. So good thing on the way he's promoting, and job stability, I think, is a very important thing in this business that people don't get. Like you said, you can be on winning streak and then all of a sudden be cut. An example for me is like Antonio Carvalho, one of the guys I coached. Like, I mean, he had a bad decision and then he got cut based on a terrible decision against Darren Elkins. And it's like, it's stupid. Like, you know, Dana White even promised him another fight. And then, you know, they cut his contract and they want him to go fight elsewhere. So I think job stability, and one of the reasons why I was a high school teacher during my fight career, because I want job stability. I want to be paid after my career is done. And a lot of people, and I always say it, there's two things that's going to happen to every fighter. One of the two things going to happen. Your body's going to go or your brain's going to go first. You need to be prepared for those moments. So if all of a sudden, you know, 2-3 knee surgeries in, you're probably done. You have to have that, you know, something to fall on. So I think the union is a good idea to get these guys, you know, keeping them confident that they have jobs. So I like it. And I'm, you know, a big believer. I'm part of the teachers union here in Ontario as well. So I'm for it.
We started to talk a little bit before we came on air about how hard it is for a fighter to transition to normal life.
Yeah, it's
when
very
I say
difficult.
Normal life, I mean, you know, guys are in the gym all day. They're working really hard to get to the next level. They're pushing themselves beyond belief, really,
yep.
More than the average human can even perceive in some cases. And then they have to just, you know, go to desk job. Like, I know Sean Pearson is like an IT manager now,
yeah.
I believe. Last
and he
I spoke
was a
to
police
him.
Officer, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these are guys that, you know, I'm sure it must be very difficult for him, knowing that he probably could have still competed in the UFC, but he wanted more job stability and a long-term career and decided to make a move over to IT.
Yeah, well, UFC fighters at least made money, and that's the thing. You're talking now kickboxers who get paid nothing. So now we gave our life to a sport that has nothing for us after. I mean, you're talking, okay, an entry-level UFC guy could make anywhere $50,000 a fight. An entry level into kickboxing is $500, yeah. $1,000. And even if you make the main event, you probably don't even crack entry level UFC money. And then all of a sudden your career's done. Either your body or your brain is gone. And now all of a sudden, like, huh, now what am I going to do? You got nothing. I'm sorry.
That's you got lucky. I mean, you're doing broadcasting.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say lucky. I mean, I'm one of the few fighters. I have a 5-year, two university degrees.
Of course.
When I say got lucky,
I mean, you happen to be able to do something. Something post-career that you love.
And that's what I say. Everyone's like, oh, you know, I don't know what to do. There's so many people, like, you can't rely on being a commentator. Out of all the kickboxers in the world, I'm the only former fighter to yeah. probably ever do it. Maybe Boss Rudin.
Ernesto Hoost did it for
yeah, a little
the
bit
Muay
here
Thai
and
world
there,
series.
But find another fighter who's done it. But I pride myself on... Yeah, when everybody was doing two-a-day training, I was working as a high school teacher. You know, I was in university. I didn't give up my life to the sport. I was able to do two careers. So I put myself in this position. That's why when I got that last concussion, I was like, it's cool. I'm making more money outside of the ring than I'm making inside of the ring. And a lot of fighters need to take that mentality. You make a big paycheck, save that money, invest it, do something right. It's a short career. You got to maximize that time.
But it must be hard because I'm sure every day you're thinking, I should go do it again.
Yeah, I'm a martial artist first. Before I'm a teacher, before I'm anything else in this world, I am a martial artist. I'm a martial artist, then a podcast host.
Not the other way around?
No.
Okay.
But no, I'm seriously, like, it's something that guys need to start taking a lot more seriously. And I don't think there's anything wrong with guys working during their careers. A lot of these young kids were like, they're not working part-time jobs to chase a career. Work your part-time job. Struggle. You need that. You need to have something to fall back on. And I mean, it stresses me out so much to see fighters leave their sport with nothing and no path. And even with me, I opened up a very successful gym. I had, you know, I'm doing the radio show. There's things you got to do. And you can look at other guys like Elias Theodoro. He's building himself socially. He's
An
doing
empire.
All of these things. Yeah, he's doing his thing, right? You have to build yourself outside the sport. It makes you more money in the sport. It gives you longevity. It builds a brand. Guys need to be a little bit smarter that way.
Yeah, and you see a lot of people become instructors after the fact, but it's hard to get by.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Justin Bruckman, who is in here, he lives out in Oshawa, so the cost of living isn't quite as high, but he gets to do what he loves to do.
Yeah, but he has a very successful gym.
Yeah,
his
exactly.
gym is super successful. Mm-hmm. He's got great fighters. He did it well. He used his name, build up a sport, build up a community, and now he has a very passionate group of, you know, his jiu-jitsu program. He's got MMA fighters. Like, he's coached all over the UFC as well, you know.
Yeah.
He's
and even Carlos well Newton, who... Cajun mentioned, runs a gym like down the street from here, the MMA World Gym.
Yeah, I think he coaches and those
there.
Kind of things.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, good on Carlos. I mean, he's probably in that stage. He was one of the old school guys that, you know, didn't really understand brain trauma and this and that. So I'm just hoping he's, you know, his health is okay post-career.
He didn't fight that many times, though, if I recall.
Like, I thought he did. He was before... Okay. Before his career, though, he was into Taekwondo, I believe. He had a pretty big Taekwondo career.
Yeah, that puts smiles on the body, too.
Yeah.
But I believe he, like, in mixed martial arts, and I'll look this up now while I tap dance and try to kill some time here. But Carlos Newton, his martial arts record, oh, no, he did. He had 30 fights in 16-14.
Which is...
That's a lot.
In UFC is quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't
in
have that
MMA.
Many in the UFC. That's just an MMA.
That's just an MMA?
Yeah. In terms of UFC, he had one. He had more, almost more in pride. He had more in pride than he did the UFC.
Did he have... did he ever do... I don't know. Did he ever do kickboxing?
It doesn't have a kickboxing record here for him, but he probably did. I mean, back then, I'm sure it wasn't as documented as
yeah,
it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he started in 96 with mixed martial arts.
But he's one of the old school.
Yeah.
I mean, like... Guys like him, Gary Goodridge, are probably the pioneers. I mean, those guys were probably fighting before GSP were fighting. So, I mean, that's definitely a pioneer of Canadian MMA.
Well, let's transition to this weekend. We've been doing our picks every week. Right now, I'm under $100. I'm a little disappointed about it, so I got to climb back up. And you're at $70, so
yeah,
you got to move up.
Last week,
I'm only 60 cents below $100, but you know.
All right, I got to catch up. Yeah, that's why these favorites, man. I stopped doing these parlays, but if I got to catch up, I might have to put something together.
Well, we might have the same thing. But you go ahead.
My first one is I'm gonna put Fabricio Werdum. I think that's my one pick. Do I want to parlay it? I'm gonna say with no.
You're just gonna go straight.
No, it's -200. It's not enough. Yeah. I'm gonna parlay it with. Let's go Jimmy Manoa.
Okay,
let's go Jimmy Manoa. Well, I think he's gonna get it done. Probably by TKO.
Am I allowed to use one of the two legs that
yes.
you have? Okay, I'm gonna go Werdum and Leon Edwards. I think Leon Edwards is
a good pick.
It's about +120. I think for both of us, it's +120 because Edwards and Manoa are the same.
The same -200.
-200 right now. So we'll see how that goes. Hakeem's a big favorite. He's joining us a little bit later on, but that's certainly looks like a fun card. I think Werdum should be a much bigger favorite than -200. But
yeah, that's why I liked it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit earlier on. I was saying I just think Verdum's a level above Volkov. And I don't think Volkov's who he's beaten is all that impressive. You know, an aging Roy Nelson, Stefan Struve. So
I like Leon Edwards
too.
I like Leon Edwards as a pick.
Yeah, Leon's hot right now, and he's only getting better.
Yeah,
his brother Fabian's looking good too. He's outside of the UFC, probably going to land in the UFC sooner rather than later.
Huh. No, I like it. I think his ability to change, fight different ways. No, I really like Leon Edwards. Good pick. I should have picked it.
Well, while we're on the subject of the UK, Darren Till will be on the show next week. We're looking forward to that. He's back in the gym after battling an illness, and it's good to see him back.
We need to see him back more. He had such good hype after the Cowboy win, and then all of a sudden the heat died down, so we got to bring the Darren Till heat back.
Yeah.
He wants, correct me if I'm wrong, he wanted Wonderboy.
He's naming everybody. He's naming Wonderboy, Usman. He doesn't care. He's just give me an opponent,
he's confident.
Mate. Just give me an opponent.
Yeah, he's confident.
I'll destroy him.
Are you going to talk like that in the interview to him?
No, probably not.
No?
I mean, I could
we
try.
Should practice. We should practice for
it. Well, he's a scouser, I guess it's called, which is I think someone from, people from Ireland that moved to Liverpool are called Scousers, something along those lines.
Hmm.
And he has a very unique accent that has lots of "h's" in it.
Yeah, with a little bit of Brazilian, too.
Yeah, well, he knows Portuguese. And you watch him speak Portuguese in that accent, and it's good times.
Portuguese.
Yeah. He has a daughter in Brazil, which is cool.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's got a daughter in Brazil.
He's young, too, isn't
Portuguese.
He?
Yeah, he's 26.
Okay.
Yeah, so he
sees
his daughter
younger.
Every now and then when he goes out there and trains, and he's beloved in both Brazil and the UK and Liverpool. And my colleague Jim Edwards actually just posted on Twitter that the UFC card in Dublin might get moved to Liverpool. They're having some troubles with it, so
That'll
be interesting. If you can move a card to Liverpool, headline with Darren Till, let's go.
Yeah, and Glory's going to England too, so maybe we'll get Darren Till watching.
Yeah, that would
maybe
be good.
We can ask him. I think we're going in June, I believe. We're going to Birmingham.
Oh, cool. Is Birmingham near Liverpool? I don't know. I don't know my geography.
My
you just show
Europe
up.
Geography.
You just show up. You
I
call
just
the
show
fights.
Up. Yeah. They tell me. They book my flight. They tell me that they get me to the hotel, and then from there, I make it work.
Who are some of the big UK fighters in Glory right now?
The big one are heavyweight. There's rumors Chai Lewis Perry being back.
Oh, wow. I love that guy. So
yeah, he knows how to talk.
He was
he's
with
from there, right?
Yeah, he was with one championship, but he's also
he was
with
the ONE FC champion. Then he had some good wins in Glory. What you got to love about him, he knows how to talk, right?
Yeah.
He knows how to build fights. So I think they're looking at him. But there's other talent, but I don't think we're going to get. We have a young kid, Bailey Sudgen, who's pretty good. Few up-and-comers. But the main guys are more Muay Thai guys from England. Liam Harrison, Jordan Watson, like guys who I'm not too sure if we'll get on the card. But still a lot of good talent. But they seem to be more of a Muay Thai type community than a kickboxing.
Well, Joe, you've given me a good segue. Because speaking of up-and-comers that are very good at Muay Thai, we've got Hakeem Dawodu joining us on the show. He fights Danny Henry in his UFC debut. Danny Henry coming off a win in his debut against David Tamir. David Tamir or Daniel Tamir? Daniel Tamir. Beat Daniel Tamir in his debut. I always get them confused. D. Tamir. Hard. Daniel and David, such similar names.
I'm sure we'll forgive you for that one.
Yeah, I'm sure the Tamir brothers will forgive me. But Danny Henry came into the UFC with a win over him. And now Hakeem Dawodu has his debut after training at SBG. And he joins us now on the TSN MMA show. All right, I'm pleased to be joined now by Hakeem Duwadu, 7-0, I guess 7-0-1 if you want to count the draw, but I thought you won that fight. Hakeem Duwadu joins us. He's on the UFC in London card this weekend against Danny Hendry. How's it going?
It's going good, man. You know, I just finished getting my hair cut. I'm back at the hotel right now, so, you know, I'm just kind of chilling out.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No interruption. You know, I'm all set now. I'm just cooling.
Excellent. Well, you were down in Ireland training at SBG. How was that experience?
It was a good experience. You know, I had a good training camp. You know, I got a lot of work with some good high-level grapplers. And it was a nice switch up from my camp back at home, just because I was lacking a bit of sparring partners. So it was nice to get a new set of sparring partners that necessarily didn't know me too well, so weren't afraid to try and put it on me, you know?
Absolutely. Well, were you able to get in contact with Conor McGregor there? Did you train with him at all?
He was there, but he wasn't really in training camp. So to be honest, out of the whole camp I was there, I only saw him about, I'd say, maybe three times. So I didn't get to train with him, but regardless, I got to train with the whole SBG team and get some really good work. And, of course, I had Coach John Kavanaugh, you know, watching over me. So it was a good camp.
Who are some guys there that really tested you in the gym?
You know, I got to spar with Brian Moore. Of course, the Russian Hammer, Artem. I got to move around with James Gallagher. Also, there was always fighters flying in from all over the world, you know what I mean? So I got a wide variety of sparring partners out there, from kickboxers to grapplers, K-1 fighters. So it was a good mix-up.
Who's going to be in your corner this weekend?
Oh, of course, McQuan. McQuan was out there, so obviously I was working with him. So, yeah, I got everybody, man.
Do you have John Kavanaugh there as well with you, or were you just there kind of temporarily?
Yeah, I was actually staying at John Kavanaugh's house, so he was there all the time watching me. You know what I mean? He's going to be in my corner for this fight. So, you know, he watched the whole training camp, so I'm very confident.
So this fight is going to be almost the year anniversary from when you last fought. You beat Steven Seiler March 18th. You're going to be fighting March 17th. You signed with the UFC back in November. How anxious are you to get back in there? I don't think you had any injuries or anything keeping you out. You've just been playing the waiting game.
I was playing the waiting game, but a lot of people didn't know. You know, I did have a little bit of injuries. It kind of worked out for the best that I had to wait a little bit, because I was able to, you know, heal up 100% and, you know, come into this training camp with nothing bothering me. So I think it all worked out for the best.
Last time we spoke, I mentioned that Jose Aldo had moved over to fight Max Holloway, and that there was a fight available in Canada against Ricardo Lamas. You see what happens. Josh Emmett comes in, he gets the fight, he wins, and then suddenly he's a top five featherweight. Do you wish you would have gotten that fight?
You know, I wish I would have gotten that fight. I would have taken that fight, but, you know, of course, everything happens for a reason. Maybe Josh Emmett moved up a little bit too quickly. He got stopped his last fight, but I'm still going to be making waves, really, really big waves this year, and I'm planning on moving up quick, so I'm not really too concerned about it. I'm still young, I'm in my prime, and I feel like it's my time to shine.
How many times do you hope to fight this year?
Pardon me?
How many times are you hoping to fight in 2018?
At least, you know, four times. You
wow.
know what I mean? I want to bang out at least four fights. I know there's another card coming up in Dublin, Ireland, May 27th, so I'm hoping to get on that one too.
Wow. And you know, they haven't announced any Canadian cards just yet, which leads me to believe there's probably a lot of them coming up in the latter part of the year, given that they usually do three or four, and we don't have anything announced just yet. But are you hoping to get on a couple of those if you can?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a no-brainer. You know what I mean? I think, of course, I got a fight in my home country. You know, I was I'm born and raised in Canada, so it would only make sense to put, you know, me in on a Canadian card and, you know, represent the country and, you know, get the people really excited and rooting, you know?
Yeah, Dana White has said that he owes Calgary, and that's where you were born. And, of course, where you have done a lot of your training. So it would be nice to see the UFC back there after the last card.
Definitely, you know what I mean? I want to start making waves, and if they bring UFC back to Calgary, I definitely want to headline it and, you know, just represent my city and bring UFC back to Calgary and, you know, put on a good show for my people and everybody supporting me.
You've never fought outside of North America before. This is your first time fighting in the UK. Obviously, you've become acclimated to it from training in Ireland. But what's your experience been like so far in the UK?
You know, this is my first time fighting out of, you know, North America for MMA, you know. But a lot of my, majority of my kickboxing career, I fought a lot in, you know, Germany, Russia, Iran, Bangkok. So, you know, it's not my first time having international experience, but it's just my first time fighting MMA outside the country, outside of North America. But, you know, it's nice. It's a nice switch up. I think it's actually a really good move because, you know, I'm known in Canada, I'm known in North America, but now, you know, I can get the UK, the European people to see me, and I think it's only going to broaden my fan base.
Excellent. Well, my co-host Bazooka Joe isn't here for this interview, but he has he does have an open offer to UFC fighters. If any of them want to train with him at Bazooka MMA for a full training camp, he says it's on him. He wants to get the experience of coaching someone in the UFC. So the offer's out there if you want to come to Toronto for a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been actually wanting to come out to Toronto for a little bit. I know a couple guys out there, Simon Marcus, Matt Embry. You know what I mean? And definitely, I'd like to come out to Toronto, check out his gym. So, you know, maybe after this fight, I'll kind of see where things go and, you know, give him a holler.
Awesome. Well, we always appreciate having you on the show, Hakeem. Very excited about your debut. You're one of the most highly touted Canadian prospects in a long time, and it's going to be excellent to see what you bring to the cage on this Saturday against Danny Hendry, available on Fight Pass.
Thank you very much, and I'm going to bring a lot to the table, so I'm just, you know, telling everybody right now, keep an eye on me, and watch what's going to happen.
All right, Hakeem, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
That was Hakeem Dawodu, really looking forward to his debut, and that will wrap up another episode of the TSN MMA show. Next week, as I mentioned, Darren Till will be on the show. We'll see if the UFC's moved an event to Liverpool, but Jim Edwards says we should know by the end of the week, so that should be interesting. You can check out tsn.ca/UFC for the latest news and notes, and check out Joseph Valtellini on YouTube. His latest videos are instructional videos on head movement, drilling defense. Do you have any other new videos?
Yeah, I talked about fighting pressure fighters.
Okay.
So now if you're going to...
Like fighting you.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't say I'm a typical pressure fighter, but yeah, it's someone who is aggressive with their shield coming forward, that Dutch style kickboxer. How do you beat them? So I give you three different strategies on how to beat a pressure fighter.
All right, cool. Check that out, YouTube.com. Look up Joseph Valtellini, and you'll find all of Joe's videos. You can learn how to become a martial artist from the comfort of your own home.
That's it.
You just got to get up off that office chair.
So easy. Yeah. Start at episode one. I'm almost at like 60 episodes. So there you go. If you watch one a day in
box
2 months.
Box set out in stores soon.
Yeah. If Blu-ray. You do one a day, look where you're going to be. Yeah. You're just going to be this professional athlete just at home.
Yeah. Chromecast, that's your TV. You stand there.
Done. And practice.
Learn head movement. Practice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I should just quit my gym and just do that at home.
And just do it at home.
Become a Bazooka MMA guy.
That's
the comfort of my own home. Save on gym fees. No, don't do that.
And we stopped talking about your weight cut issue. That's gone out.
I don't know. I could still probably do it. I talked to my wife about it. She seemed like she was okay with me trying it. I don't know.
All right.
Got the 135. We'll see if I can do it. See how ripped I look.
There you go.
Lose the dad bod a little bit.
There you go.
Now, hopefully I don't hit my head on the sauna, on the tile, and then I get scratched.
Right. It's part of the process.
From the event I'm not competing in.
I'll drag you out. It's okay.
Exactly. Yeah, like the guy in the fight you mentioned earlier.
I'll throw some cold water on you. You'll be fine.
You'll be
fine.
All right. I think I could do it without even doing sauna stuff, but we'll see.
Yeah, you could.
We'll see. I think I'm walking around, you know, 140, somewhere in the 144 to 147
so
range.
So my guy fighting, who he's like 150 pounds and he fights at 135. He'll make weight in a week, 15
Maybe I'll do it with him. I'll cut weight with him.
You got to come to Montreal.
All right, Joe. We'll see everybody
next
week. Also,
week.
Bazooka MMA on Progress Road in Scarborough if you want to train
Progress.
There. All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.